WNCS, the talk of the town.
Good afternoon, Milwaukee, and welcome once again to a Tuesday edition of the Evening Rush. It is 3:05. You're listening to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town, and, 2 days away from Thanksgiving. In studio with me is none other than Sheriff David Clive. How are you doing, sir?
Wonderful. Good afternoon to you, sir. Good afternoon to your listeners. It is a distinct honor and a privilege to be in the presence of the Duke of Earl.
Oh, Lord.
You know, that's my name for you now, right?
There was a time.
You got a lot to live up to with that nickname. But you know, Sheriff, I don't want to have to take it back now.
There was a time, But my wife's listening.
What's that saying? I might not be as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was. Is that what you mean?
My wife is listening, and this is a family show.
I don't mean anything.
I know
your mind's at, man.
It is good to see you, Sheriff Clark. I saw you the other day when you were out working, passing out turkeys and those kind of things. Man, how does that feel?
Doing my part. I'll tell you, and I said this, there is no better feeling than to go out and do something for others and have them really exhibit their appreciation beyond the, just a little thank you and that sort of thing. And I know we were in the 2400 block of North 17th Street at a home and delivered a Thanksgiving dinner, actually two of them at that location. The woman was in tears. And everybody was there at the one stop, the Brewers Charities, Hunger Task Force, or Feeding America, I'm sorry. Right. My office was represented. You were there, MCS, 1290, the talk of the town. And
Brotherhood of the Firefighters.
Firefighters, thank you. I didn't want to leave anybody out, and that's what happens when you try to name everybody. Yeah. But anyway, tears were streaming down her face, and she said, I feel like a star with all this attention and this food, this graciousness that you're extending. And she was really overcome.
Yes, she was.
Like I said, she wasn't bawling. I mean, tears were streaming down her face. And to me, that's sincere. And she couldn't believe it. She said, all this attention for me? And so, when there's moments like that, those are defining moments, that unless you're out there to be able to experience it, it doesn't do it justice. So and then, TV cameras were there, and she says, oh, I'm on TV. I'm going to be on. it made her feel a queen for a day, even if for a brief moment in time. That's what I get out of it, because it reminds me. It's a grounding mechanism that I use. It reminds me of how fortunate I am, and that life's a two-way street. And anytime we get an opportunity to do something for somebody else, we need to take it, and it's fulfilling when you actually do it. So that's why I enjoyed it. And then we went on and delivered to five more locations yesterday with my group of people, including 1290, and I had several deputies along with me. And we got the same reaction. We didn't get the tears from everybody, but that one stood out because of that. But the reception we got from people, and then they were all said, the sheriff's out here bringing us our Thanksgiving, and they couldn't believe it. They said, well, I can't believe that you would. I said, well, why not? First of all, I'm a public servant. I work for you. This is a two-way street, and it gives me great joy to be able to engage in activities such as this. So it was a great morning, and we've done this before, and we don't just do it at this time here. My organization, that we have made a commitment to be a partner in different things that add value to the community. And that's why I show up. That's why I demonstrate that from the top of this organization, that, hey, if the sheriff can get out there and go rap on a door and carry a turkey in or the box and go in and not just drop it off and run. We actually spend some time with the people, in some dialogue. Who's going to have to cook and, who's coming over?
And just so people are aware, there are many deputies who do a lot of volunteer and great work in this community that people don't know anything about. And that's what people really need to know, that the deputies do a lot of work in this community, nondescript But they are doing a great job also.
They do. We have a volunteer spirit. And I'll be honest with you, that didn't exist before I got there. We had to work up to this point. But like I said, it starts at the top. It starts with me leading by example. We're involved in the Special Olympics, handing out awards to Special Olympians. We do the...
You're involved in NCSL football, and we are gracious and appreciative of what you have done to assist us. I mean, after all, it is not us, it's the children. And so, you know, words cannot express our gratitude for what the Sheriff's Department has done to assist us this year when nobody else would be there. You guys stepped up and really made it possible for 650 boys and their families to realize what we're attempting to do, and that's build leadership in young men. So I want to thank you publicly for what you and the sheriff's you and your department have done to assist us this year.
And you know, we don't do it for acknowledgement and congratulations and whatnot, but we appreciate the the thankfulness. We know how important it is. And I'll pass that on because I don't take the credit. I will take the credit for getting it started. I'm a little selfish that way because it was tough sledding at first. We couldn't get many people that wanted to do this. You know, we do the Salvation Army bell ringing.
Yes, sir.
We have a group of people, 25 or so, that are going to go out. And we've done this now. I think this is our third or fourth year doing this. And I actually get out there and bell ring and stand outside, a grocery store or Walmart. For example, this year we'll be at Bayshore Town Square and ring the bell and greet people and wish them a great holiday season. And the generosity, people look and they go, hey, you know, I like the fact that your organization's out here. I guess I can dig in my pocket and give a little bit. So we understand what that means for them to see us out there. And that's why I say we don't do it for acknowledgement, but we do it as part of demonstrating our commitment. Because it's one thing to say, yeah, we support the community and we're part of the community, but you got to show it. And that's what those things do. We're involved with the American Lung Association, a charity event where we have a number of deputies involved in that effort. It's just the blood drive. So for us, it isn't just a one-time thing. And it isn't just the token, you know, well, we'll do this and say we did it. It goes on all year. But I'm most proud of everything that I brought to this organization in terms of a culture that we really have a volunteer spirit in the Milwaukee County Sheriff's
Office. You know, you are a lifelong Milwaukeean. Have you ever seen the conditions the way they are today? I mean, I don't think people realize that there are as many people going to bed hungry in this city. And you guys are out on the front line. You get out, you see what's going on the street. How did it get to be where it is? I mean, it was gradual? I mean, or did it seem like it happened overnight?
No, it's gradual. These things don't happen overnight. Economies don't, in this situation, economies don't turn on their heads overnight. A lot of it is neglect from the public officials. And when I say that, I need to qualify because they don't have all the answer, and I'm not one of those big government guys anyway. But there are certain things they can do to set into motion those things that will allow the private sector to thrive, to be profitable, and then therefore create jobs and so on and so forth. But there are certain government policies that detract from that. One of them is excessive regulation, high taxes. Businesses move out of town. They say, heck, I'm not paying these taxes. I'm not going to live with this regulation. I'm going down south and set up camp there. And so that's why I said from our government officials who, did, I guess they didn't believe the tea leaves. Because in my organization, Earl, over a year ago, I was talking about how this recession was going to be different and that it was going to affect the public sector. Usually, our experience has been that the public sector, government, so to speak, has been recession-proof. And I was saying a year ago, this one's going to be different. It's going to be deeper. It's going to be like something we've never seen. Well, let's reach the public sector. You know, read about the challenging budgets, both state, federal, city, you know, county,
everywhere.
And that's what makes this one different. And so I've done what I can to prepare this organization for this day. But being in law enforcement, starting out as a patrol officer, and working in some pretty depressed areas, I've seen a lot of destitute people and poverty and but I've never seen it to this magnitude. That's what's different. There's always been poverty in Milwaukee, but it's never been 25% of the people right. living under the poverty level. It's always high. It might have been 17, 15, you know, 12 in there. So as a law enforcement officer, we've always seen it, but not to the depths of the magnitude that we're seeing now. That's what I think is different.
Because in the case of the city's statistics will bear out that there's less crime. Crime has gone down. Now, that's what the city says, those statistics that are being reported. How can it possibly be that the rate of people being out of work and impoverished, if people make the statements that crime causes poverty, how can it be then that the crime rate continues to go down in light of what's going on now?
Well, there's an example of
is that an oxymoron?
I don't believe that sentiment. Some do. That's, you know,
right.
that's for debate and discussion. However, I don't know what it means, and I'm always careful, you know, when they say crime is down, and the statistics show that, but I can't think of a more static way of determining quality of life in a neighborhood than by some statistic. There's still too many instances of crime in this city. Tell that to somebody whose family member has been slain or shot or had a gun stuck in their face and the convenience store robbed and so on and so forth. Try telling them that statistically crime is down. I believe statistically it is, and I applaud all of law enforcement, not just the Milwaukee Police Department, because a lot of law enforcement and the criminal justice system is playing a role in that. John Chisholm and the district attorney's office are playing a role. There's a strategy being applied. I agree with that strategy. I've been talking about that strategy for years now to anybody that would listen, and I knew it would lead to statistical levels, but I know they have some ad that says there are 2,000, you know, 700 fewer victims. Well, how many does that leave left that there were? And so I'm just saying I'm careful when I say try to convince somebody that Milwaukee's a safer city, maybe statistically. But if you live in the areas where this is happening, if you live in some of these economically depressed areas of the central city, you don't see it. When the drug house is still in operation, when gangs still intimidate and control the neighborhood, when houses are being burglarized and cars continue to be stolen, even though statistically it's down, try convincing those individuals that things are different. And I would say rather than look at the statistics, let's go ask the people that live in these neighborhoods where this stuff goes on a daily basis and ask them if they feel safer, because the fear of crime is just as important as, you know, to deal with as the actual instances of criminal
activity. Well, with the county budget being where it is and you know, in charge of the Sheriff's Department and the budget for not only the Sheriff's Department but the House of Correction and all of those other entities, you have constantly turned in budgets that were negative, where obviously
in a good way, you know.
Yeah. I meant in a good way. That certainly every
surpluses,
and but now you are faced, as all law enforcement and every other facet of government, is faced with an issue where there's just not enough dollars to go around to even support you at bare bones. What can be done? You're facing 8 days furloughs for some of your deputies. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. We're going to go to a break a little bit before that. But it's some tough times now. Even as tough as you are, with sharp as you are with the pen, it's even tough for you, right?
Every day. And that's the way I've approached this for the 7 years that I've been sheriff from year one. I made it clear one of my highest priorities and the organization was to live within budget. And this was from an organization that for a long time annually they were bleeding red ink deficits. And I don't mean a couple thousand here and there. I'm talking multi-million dollar deficits that this organization was running. I'm dealing with other people's money, and I don't think that that is ethical to do when you're dealing with other people's money. You have to be judicious with it. Sometimes you allocate resources or purchase resources in some areas people might not agree with, but that's a decision that the head of the organization gets to make.
Now, we've got to go to a break, and because we're right up against it. But when we come back, I want to ask about the helicopter. You took a beating. You know, that was a brand new helicopter. It was pretty.
Still got the scars on my back.
It was a pretty helicopter. You know what I mean?
But, it was beautiful.
But you made a decision to decide to, and you took some heat for that. So we're going to continue to talk a little bit about that, and before we even get out of here, we're going to ask if you're going to do any cooking this Thanksgiving, or are you just going to be one who's going to partake in everything?
All right, I might surprise some people.
All right. All right, it's 321 in studio with me is Sheriff David Clark. Our phone lines are going to be open, certainly. We're going to spend some time with the sheriff today. You can call in. We're going to be talking about a myriad of subjects. So you are listening to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
This portion of the Evening Rush is being brought to you by Wendy's, and you know when it's real.
Indoors is to do a little holiday shopping at Walgreens.
Clean up at aisle 4.
They have so many.
Celebrating 30 years of broadcast excellence. Now back to the Evening Rush with Earl Ingram on 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
3:30, you're listening to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town. The Sheriff Clark is hanging out today, and it's good to have him in. We're going to go directly to the phone lines. JT, you have a question or comment for Sheriff Clark?
Yes, sir. Brother Earl Ingram.
How you doing?
How you doing this evening, sir?
I'm doing fine.
Okay. And Sheriff Clark, how you doing this evening, sir?
Wonderful. Thanks for asking.
And thank you for being there, sir. And Earl, before I get started, I'm going to make this real quick, Earl. But the reason why I call, just wanted to say, Earl, thank you and Kira and 1290 radio station for watching out, for making it nice for people that wanted to have a nice Thanksgiving. Earl, I was one of the lucky ones. They called in and won a turkey box.
Congratulations, man.
And but what I'm trying to say, thank you and Kira and 1290 radio station for doing that forever.
You need to thank all those people that Sheriff Clark mentioned.
I'm going to get there.
Yeah, well, you ain't got to thank them all.
I'm not saying to 1290. Okay. I want to say to Chandra Staples, to Lynette, to Carolyn, and other people that I met when I came there, I haven't seen for a while.
Okay.
That was working hard, Earl, because when I was there at 9:30 yesterday, you was on the streets, Earl, delivering packages and stuff yourself.
Yeah. There were a lot of people here. It really was. I mean, it was an amazing endeavor to give out.
Operation.
Yeah, 450 turkeys, 460 turkeys.
I know that's right.
In one day. Yeah, that took a lot of work, a lot of help.
And, sir, I just want to say thank you so much.
All right, JT, we hope
And now, Sheriff Clark, sir.
Yes, sir.
Sheriff, a lot of times from the old school, I may not agree with you politically sometimes.
Well, that's okay.
Cause Sheriff, I want to thank you and your organization.
Because the sheriff and I don't agree politically all the time. But go ahead.
Excuse me. Sheriff Clark?
Yes, sir.
I just want to say respectfully, sir, again, I may not agree with you sometimes with your political idealism or whatever the case you may do. But, sir, thank you for being there and doing an excellent job. I want to thank the sheriff department, the fire department, everybody else was involved, Earl, and the young people, Earl, that you had there helping out. I just want to say thank 1290 and thank you, Sheriff, and everybody was there for making Thanksgiving nice for everybody. Because I would wish that we had jobs where we can go and buy our own Thanksgiving dinners and stuff like that for our families. But since that's not the case, I appreciate the people that work hard to make it make sure.
Hey, JT, we will get that message to everybody who was involved. That is a great message, what you just said, Sheriff.
You know, thank you, JT. You know, and that's an important aspect of this, too, that people are grateful. You know, they don't have this, you know, like I said, we went to these homes and it wasn't just, you know, put it down over there, thanks, goodbye. You know, they took the time to express their gratitude. And that's a very important part of accepting charity, accepting, you know, thanks or whatever, that you show that in return. And, you know, every house that I was at, they all invited me to come by Thanksgiving Day to partake in what, you know, they were given.
Right.
And isn't that the essence of Thanksgiving? You take what you have
and
you share it with somebody else. Every house said, Sheriff, you're more than welcome to come by.
And you know what? And they meant it.
They darn right they meant it. Because I had the address, and I said, I know where you live now. You know, I may come knocking on your door.
Are you stalking?
All right. It's
I think that's what they call it nowadays.
Tim, how you doing, man? You have a question or comment?
Thanks, Earl. Thanks a lot. How you doing, Sheriff Clark?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, that's good. Listen, I want to ask you just two questions, especially about you always trying to get money from the so-called aldermen down there, you know, to help with their crime tests and that constant element.
Well, no, he doesn't deal with the aldermen. He deals with the county board.
Well, they're all the same to me.
Okay. All right.
They're all the same to me. They send money in the wrong direction all the time. I just want to ask them about down in Memphis, they have you talk to police all the time, they got a $50 handcuff fee. Every time they handcuff a criminal, it costs $50 that the criminal got to pay. For the cuffs, when he gets to court. That got nothing to do with the crime, because he got to pay $50 for the cost of the cuffs being put on him. And also I wanted to know about my TV buses. The TV buses have those TVs on them, and you'd be looking for wanted people and spend all that money for billboards. And since you're part of the county and the bus of the county, why aren't some of those people picture run on the bus? You know, thousands of people run the bus, and they know some of these people know these individuals, and it wouldn't cost you nothing. And the last thing I wanted to ask you was about Juarez, Mexico. That's down there by Laredo, Texas. I found out that they'll house criminals for $1,000 a year, not a month, a year. They'll give them three tacos a day and a glass of water. And, you know, this overcrowding and all that problem could be solved like that. And I just wanted to ask you your opinion on the handcuffs and the TVs.
Okay, some great questions, and I'll tell you why. You know, anytime that we get a chance,
you know, Sheriff. Unfortunately, it's that time again.
1290. WMCS. Yeah. The talk of the town. We got to go to a break.
Yeah.
Please stay with us.
All right. Well said. We'll be back.
Retail closeouts, liquidations, overstock. We'll be right back.
celebrating 30 years of broadcast excellence. The Evening Rush on 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
Welcome back, 341. You're listening to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town. Sheriff, you want to respond to JT had some very interesting questions that he posed to you, and now you got a shot to respond.
That was Tim.
Oh, yeah, Tim. I'm sorry.
JT was very gracious about the Thanksgiving stuff. Anyway, Tim, I said those are some great questions because I like some of his ideas. Some of them aren't doable, and here's why. First of all, in terms of a handcuff fee, we have explored things like a booking fee when you're booked in to the county jail that you'd have to pay a certain fee, and we've looked at a fingerprint fee. The Attorney General has said that we cannot charge a fingerprint fee, and there's some question legally as whether or not we can even charge a booking fee. Now, there's another aspect to this. You can't squeeze blood out of a turnip. If the person is indigent or doesn't have the ability to pay, I don't care how many times you arrest them, you aren't going to get any money out of them. So if you start writing in revenues, anticipated revenues on stuff like that, and these are these stupid budget tricks that governments engage in. They go, oh, we can make $250,000 on booking fees in the county jail. But then you have all these individuals who are unemployed. They have no money. All of a sudden, you don't get that $250,000. That creates a revenue deficit in your budget. So, I mean, budgets are complex. I don't want to bore people with them, but that's how those things work. But those are popular with politicians because they can create some revenue stream, even though you're not going to realize that it buys them time. So that's why this book, I didn't coin that phrase. I was reading an article in Governing Magazine, and the title of the article was Stupid Budget Tricks. One of the other things that Tim talked about, the wanted billboards and whatnot, we don't pay for those. Those are donated by generous ad agencies like Lamar Advertising, Clear Channel, who donate that space for those wanted posters, you know, the wanted billboards. And in terms of he mentioned something about a taco and a glass of water or something like that.
Three tacos. And a
yeah,
glass
we're
of
governed
water.
By State Department of Corrections in terms of the diet. It has to be a certain caloric intake and so on and so forth. I know in Maricopa County, with a very infamous sheriff, Joe Arpaio, he feeds inmates green bologna. And he's cut out coffee because he said it has no nutritional value. So they get water. They do get a little juice because
now, when
has
you say green bologna, what are we talking about? Green bologna.
Green bologna's died.
Why would they die?
I don't know. Joe does a lot of things. I don't. But the reason why he gets away with that, the state of Arizona, and this is more towards Tim's ideas. Every state has different regulations, and those states allow them to get away with that. In Wisconsin. They have a tendency to want to pamper prison and jail inmates. And I'm not talking about using draconian measures, but at the same time, we're not running a four-star, you know, retreat or hotel. And so we're prohibited, for Tim's benefit, from doing a lot of those things. But I wouldn't be adverse to some of the things that he had to.
Well, you know, now, you know, I heard somebody the other day mention, and they had spent some time in a house of correction, and they said that it is just a waste of time now with the guys who are in the house of correction because they sit around and do nothing. There's nothing for them to do, and that you have taken away all modes of, dare I use the term entertainment, maybe entertainment is the wrong thing, to keep them active and busy, and that, you know, they're just wasting away.
Well, first of all, I don't know that is the purpose of a confinement facility, to keep people active. What I'm trying to do is keep people out of there. And I would say if the place is so horrible that, you know, there's no activities in this, which isn't true, but that's somebody's description, then stay out of there. Hopefully that's an incentive to abide by society's rules, make better lifestyle choices so that you don't end up in a confinement facility. Because I remind inmates in there, and I do talk to inmates, I remind them, when you end up going to jail and you end up going to prison, you're going to lead a life determined by somebody else, not yourself. So you don't get to pick the recreational activities and the things that you might want to engage in. Like I said, this is not a retreat. It's a confinement facility. It's not a draconian place, but at the same time, it is jail. It is not a pleasant place. I'm not going to try to get anybody to believe that it is, and, oh, it's nice. And no, it's not supposed to be. So there are things that they can, and we encourage them to engage in. As a matter of fact, early 2010, I'm going to roll out a shift in terms of inmate life in the correctional facility south, which people call the House of Correction. And I'm going to structure everything around discipline and order to instill in these mostly males, but you know, we do have some females. What they're lacking is structure and discipline as a foundation. And if you don't have structure and discipline in your life, as you know, Earl, nothing else is going to take hold. That's why they don't, that's why they quit school. They made lifestyle choices that are questionable. They ended their education. They won't stay gainfully employed. They abuse alcohol and drugs. That's the result of not having discipline to make better lifestyle choices. Life is tough. It's tough for everybody. But everybody doesn't go and engage in activities which society frowns upon, meaning, you know, violations of the law. So, you know, I don't, and I talk straight up to these guys. You know, I don't want to hear about how you didn't have a job, because just because you don't have a job doesn't mean you should stick a gun in somebody's face and take their money, or, you know, at the ATM, or take
I
their
think
car.
Everybody is in agreement with that.
Right. And so, you know, I would say if a guy said, hey, it's not a pleasant place, well, I wouldn't argue with him. It's not.
You're not going to make it any more pleasant?
No.
All right. That's simplistic. Chuck, how you doing? You have a question or comment?
We're good. Thanks, sir. I have a question for Sheriff Clark. Sheriff Clark, thanks for coming on today.
Sure.
Sure. Just a question to sort of add, with the fact that people are there sometimes for different lengths of time, and you were starting to touch on some of the activities there, and just wondering, let's say, with respect to revenue or at the same time job training or skills, is it possible that for the times they're there, there's a certain short range of training that they pick up on skills that, let's say, that the House of Corrections or the House of Confinement and Discipline now utilizes those individuals while they're there to maybe remove brush or end up with endeavors that generates revenue while those individuals are picking up a training skill. And then to that extent, if they do have the booking fees or they do have even child support that they're in arrear, that those funds that are garnered through that, I know through hospitality and working in the laundry room, through the kitchen, as they're paid for that, I know they do a similar project up in Ozaukee County under previous Chief Mari Straub. And as they're earning those funds, it goes to paying the booking fees first. A portion of those fees, of those funds also go towards the House Confinement and Discipline for their training. And then as well, another portion starts to pay back in your arrears and child support. Is there any possibility that programs like that could be instituted down there?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you probably have piqued my plans, because that's a major component of it. I want to utilize what they do bring to the table, for lack of a better way of putting it, inmates, and create a revenue stream to be turned into inmate programming. In other words, there are things that they can engage in where, you know, currently where they can work time off. But part of my new template for this thing is to create some revenue streams that they can earn and then turn that into inmate programming. As it relates to job training, you know, we got to be realistic about this. When you talk about, and I don't mean for the caller, I'm talking about all of us. You know, we say job training, but then on the other end, we were just talking about there are no jobs. So what are we training people for, you know, when there are no jobs? We got to be realistic is all I'm saying.
Right.
You get a guy a skill, but he can't gain employment. You haven't helped that guy. You might feel good about yourself and say, well, maybe one day, but no, I need to know that when he or she walks out of there, they can walk into a job. So part of this is going to be working with employers, partnering with them, where they're going to be able to tell us, hey, I got 10 of this, and we'll work with you to train these guys. It'll take 3-4 months of training, and then when they come out, I will hire them for that very thing. But we haven't created those partnerships yet. This is all my vision at this point. Some of it is documented. It's going to take time, but what the caller had in mind is precisely the kind of thing that will add value, you know, while they're in there. But some of the stuff that's going on now is just feel good stuff. You talk about job training and what jobs?
Yeah,
you know, the leading job sectors, the fastest growing job sectors in the United States, are biotech firms, healthcare firms, and technology. We're not going to be able to train somebody in 3 or 4 months. We're talking about a higher level education, right. And there are no manufacturing jobs. So we got to be a little smarter about what we're training people to do. But I want to make sure I got an employer saying to me, "Sheriff, I got 5 at this position driving a forklift, okay? And we'll, you know, come in and we'll do the training. You get this guy out and get him here, and we'll work with him. And then when he's released, we know he could drive my forklift, and I'll hire him." I'd rather have that certain employment than this altruistic, "Well, let's get him job training or get him a GED, and then they can go out and live a prosperous life," in an economy where even skilled people are being laid off.
3:52, we got to go to a break. We're going to do the giveaways, ticket giveaways, and then Sheriff Clark, there's something you wanted to discuss on the other side. So we'll come right back and let you get into what you wanted to discuss today. And you got some time to hang with us today, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. He's cleared the schedule, and that's good to hear. 3:53, we are going to give away 4 packs of the City Suburban Holiday Classic high school basketball tournament, right? All right. Kira, handle that on the other side. Caller number 12. You're listening to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
Can I compete?
That's right. We're looking for caller number 12 right now for the City Suburban Holiday Classic. It's a 4-pack. You don't want to miss this event. Call now, 799-1290.